Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
And welcome. I'm Ed Vitagliano, sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I am joined by my co-hosts, Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries. Ray, how are you doing today, brother?
Hey, it is a beautiful day here in Texas. It's a great day in America. How are you, Ed?
I'm doing good. It's a great day in America. You know, if you go kind of small, you know, and I think about, you know, my kids and my grandkids and what I'm going to have for supper tonight and those kind of things, it is a great day in America. When you think of all the stuff that's going on, however, when you go big, it gets to be a little hairy out there. But, Ray, you are the founder of Keep Believing Ministries. That's actually a pretty good message for America. Keep believing in Jesus, isn't it?
Well, we have enough bad news. I mean, and we're going to talk about some of the problems as the program unfolds. But it's good to keep your mind on the things that are most important. And I don't know anything more important than to believe in Jesus and in these troubled times to keep believing in Him.
Amen. Well, I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson, who is news director for American Family News and One News Now, and also Walker Wildman, who's assistant to the president. Guys, good morning.
Good morning. In the kind of environment of the day, do you want to talk about polls?
I'll tell you what, we're going to talk about the big story of the day.
Yeah, let's go to Cleveland.
Yeah,
that's right. Let's go to Cleveland. That's right. The one thing that really matters.
Ray, tell us what's happening in Cleveland tonight that really does harken back to a kinder day in America.
Well, for the first time in 71 years, the Chicago Cubs are finally back in the World Series, and the Cleveland Indians haven't been there in a long time either. So great. It's a great day in America when the Indians and the Cubs are finally back in the World Series together. So, yeah, that's exciting. That's a piece of really good, happy news. And how long has it been? How long has it been since the Cubs won the World Series?
Since 1908. It's been 108 years. It was before the Great Depression.
No, I have to wonder. Now, Ray lived in Chicago. Were you there in 1908 there, Ray?
Yeah, you know, I saw this yesterday, Fred. Somebody said, it's been so long since the Cubs have been in the World Series. How long has it been? The 2016 campaign hadn't even started yet.
Well, hey, as long as we don't start the 2020 campaign, that's all I care about. Well, that is, we did want to talk about that at the top of the program. That is a bit of good news. Now, I will have to say that I will be watching the Boston Bruins play hockey tonight, but then during commercials, I'm going to slip on over to the Chicago Cubs game. As a Red Sox fan who lived through not quite as long a drought as the Cubs, I'm rooting for the Cubs to win the World Series because they have the longest drought in Major League Baseball. But anyway, it is going to be fun, and baseball is one of those things that that kind of harkens back to a different day in America, which we will now turn to.
Here we go.
Here we go. Buckle up. All right, Fred, what do we got here?
Well, I regret to inform you, after all of that.
Oh, no.
That while you may be enjoying the World Series, your Obamacare premiums are going up.
That's right. 1 week from today, the sign-up begins for the 2017 season of Obamacare, but leading up to that, you may remember last week, President Barack Obama went to Florida talking about still what he considers the positive aspects of the Affordable Care Act. But yesterday, it wasn't President Barack Obama going to the Rose Garden to make this announcement, but the announcement was from the government that the average increase in premiums for those signing up for Obamacare, the average increase of premiums, 25%. Now, here's
that's
the thing.
That's the average.
That's the average. Now, here's the thing. Now, we've been covering these stories, especially over the last several months, of the big insurance companies getting out of various jurisdictions all the way along. For example, Blue Cross Blue Shield in Tennessee, they will not be on the exchange in, I think it's Memphis and Nashville and Knoxville, but apparently they will be in Chattanooga. I think that's the way it works. But so you're going to have this. Basically, the big insurance companies, after a couple of years of Obamacare, are saying, you know, it's not worth it for us. It's costing us too much money. And Ed, I will hearken back in our days of AFA report,
right,
when we were covering the whole debate about Obamacare, the things that we talked about, not that we're great prophets, but it was just made common sense at the time, right, to mention it, is that, you know, the provisions within Obamacare that, you know, that everybody needs to sign up. You have an obligation,
right,
especially young people. But we said, no, the young people aren't going to sign up for this because they're healthy.
Right.
Plus, there's a penalty for not signing up, but the penalty was so small, the young people in particular said, I'll pay the penalty.
Right, you save money rather than pay the premiums.
Rather than pay $300, $400 a month. So what has happened is that the premiums have gone up and are going to continue to go up. Some people will still get subsidies, but for a lot of people what they discovered is the subsidies don't do it for them.
Right.
They don't qualify for the subsidies. And one of the conditions is if you're unemployed, you don't qualify for the subsidies, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. A lot of people don't know that. If you're in prison, you do get the subsidies, apparently. It's just all of this bizarre stuff. But 1 week from today, the sign-up begins, and it was really interesting with Obamacare basically collapsing the way people predicted. Fox News this morning was playing a clip of Nancy Pelosi. Remember Nancy?
Oh, yes.
You have to pass it to find out what's in it?
Yes.
Well, Nancy, in 2014... they were playing a clip of her this morning saying it's called the Affordable Care Act because it's affordable. And she kept saying affordable, affordable, affordable. Well, it's not.
Right.
It's not. And normally this would be a huge problem. If the parties were reversed on this, this was a Republican Party plan, this would be a huge election issue. But, of course, Donald Trump is saying, has told people he will scrap Obamacare and start all over again. What Hillary Clinton has said, yeah, there are a few problems with Obamacare, but, you know, we're going to enhance it. And a lot of people read into that, that the subsidies will increase, et cetera, et cetera. But there's an interesting, and I put this up on One News Now this morning, our site, a commentary from Jerry Willis at Fox News. And the title of her commentary is, "The Obamacare Endgame is Coming into View." Now, what does she mean by that? Another thing that we predicted, Ed, is that this would collapse, Obamacare would collapse, leaving America, according to government design, with only one option, the government being the provider of health care insurance, a single payer. And this is what you have, socialized medicine in Britain, socialized medicine in Canada. A lot of people believe this is what you're seeing today was designed. This is the way they wanted things to happen, that Obamacare would eventually collapse and the government would come back and say, okay, it didn't work, but we, the government, are going to provide health care insurance for you.
Well, you know, Ray, you weren't on the good old days of the AFA report when we began to talk about this in 2008, 2009. Mm-hmm. And Ray, I want to bring you in on this. There are certain – I'm not an economist, so when people start talking economics, I go, okay, if you say so. But there were certain things about this – that even to someone like me just never made sense. What seemed to be the end game, as you're talking about, Fred, and this is a great article by Jerry Willis, is that what the Democrats have always wanted is a single payer system. And in fact, there was some talk in these WikiLeaks about perhaps Hillary Clinton wanting to see Obamacare unravel so there was only one option, the government. But Ray, I don't see any way we can afford to have a massive health insurance program like other nations that are smaller, less populous.
You know, I'm looking right now at a headline here in Texas. It's 25%, but they're saying nationwide. In Texas, it's going up 37% for exactly the reason that Fred said. The major insurers, I mean, Texas is a big state. There's a lot of people here, more coming all the time. We've got a lot of folks coming from across the border into the state, both legally and other ways. So the big insurers like Aetna is already gone. Humana is already gone. earlier this year, Blue Cross Blue Shield said they wanted to raise rates 60%. Now, whether they'll be able to, I don't know, but the statewide average is 37%. Frankly, guys, that just prices a lot of middle class, not to speak of the lower middle class or, say, poor folks. They just cannot, they can't survive this way. So the system is collapsing under its own weight. And I'm wondering, how big an issue, Fred, do you think this is, how big an issue is this going to be coming down the pike of the last 2 weeks of the presidential campaign?
Well, Donald Trump certainly yesterday, when these numbers came out, is certainly trying to make it an election issue. But as I say, on the flip side of all of that, you know, Obama last week in discussing where Obamacare is, even he even mentioned the possibility, and he's starting to direct people towards the idea of the government providing insurance for you. Yeah, as an idea, and another indication where all this is going. In this Willis commentary, she mentions that 2 weeks from today during the election in Colorado, they're going to be voting on something called Colorado Care. Now, listen to this, folks. It's said to cost $25 billion a year. And how's it going to be funded? A 10% payroll tax plus various other levies. And she says, keep in mind the state's entire budget is just $27 billion. So they know.
Wow.
Obama, a 10% payroll tax plus other levies.
So the entire budget of Colorado is $27 billion. And how much is this going to cost?
$25 billion.
So you could essentially double the state's budget. And a 10% tax, payroll tax, plus other levies. Who knows what that's going to be? Probably at the gas pump.
Gas pump,
it's probably, who knows whether it's going to be on your groceries. But this is the only direction you can go when you set out to establish an entitlement that is this big.
And I think, guys, it really comes down to the issue if Donald Trump has got to pound away at this to make people realize. And this Colorado Care scheme is something perhaps that it would be wise for Republicans to talk about, just to raise attention to where Hillary Clinton has stated, and we're not speculating here, she has stated she wants to keep Obamacare but enhance it. And the big question is, what does she mean by enhance? And the only solution that I can see, the only answer I can see to that question is the government is going to get much more involved in one of two ways. Either the government is going to increase the subsidies, which will cost all taxpayers more money, or they're going to go into these markets where these big insurance companies, like you were just mentioning, Ray, are bowing out because it's not profitable for them because of the existing condition clause in Obamacare, that the people who are getting insurance are the people who have serious illnesses. The people who are healthy at the moment are saying, because this is the other problem with Obamacare, I'm going to wait until I get sick and then I'll sign up.
Right.
This is the way it works. And this is a way it's not working because of all of these provisos that were put in to make it attractive, but it's not realistic.
You know, I just was reading again in this article here about here in Texas. Let me just quote one sentence. There are stories, for example, of people getting into car wrecks and suffering injuries and buying insurance coverage through Obamacare before calling the ambulance, which is,
wow,
that's kind of hard to believe. But any system that even allows that is bound to break down,
Well, you can imagine if that was the system for car insurance.
Right.
Had an accident. Before I call the police, I'm going to call Progressive
State Farm,
Insurance,
right.
State Farm. And by the way, State Farm, you don't have any option. You have to sign me up.
Yes.
Right.
That's right.
All right.
You
got to
take me.
Here it is. Here's the credit card for the first premium. Ah. Oh, by the way, I just had an accident.
Well, you know, this was the point I was making about not being, an economic expert, but understanding human nature. Human nature is, okay, if I'm a young person, I'm healthy, and I have a choice between a relatively small yearly fine or a $300 a month premium. I think the fine at first was $250 a year.
Mm.
So that's less than 1 month's premium. So knowing human nature, which one am I going to choose? Well, I'm going to not sign up for Obamacare. The problem is that Obamacare was relying on all those premiums – to fund the outlays for those who have been signed up and are sick.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically what you're doing. The healthy, their premiums pay for the payouts for those who make claims. Well, this is another example about human nature. Human nature says, you know, if I don't have to sign up until I get sick, I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And human nature is the reason why Obamacare has been doomed for failure, I think.
And has some, a lot of people think it was designed to fail.
Right.
It was designed to fail to bring about socialized medicine in this country, which they knew way back in 2007, 2008, 2009. They knew socialized medicine would not sell in this country. So they bring this was a step, a lot of people think, towards the real goal, which is the government controlling health care.
Well, Fred, we're going to continue to obviously follow this because it's not going away, at least not right now. And in fact, our next guest is going to be talking. We're going to be talking with someone about views of about socialism and communism in this country. I think that's a tie-in that we ought to be paying attention to. Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News and One News Now. Check out some of these stories on One News Now. Fred, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome, guys.
Well, as I mentioned, you know, we switch from a big government entitlement that many people believe is a precursor to a socialized medical system and healthcare system. We want to switch to a kind of a related topic, and we want to welcome to the program Marion Smith, who's executive director of Victims of Communism, the foundation that we're going to find out a little bit more about, and their survey on the views of Americans about socialism and communism. Marion, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, tell us a little bit first off about your organization, Victims of Communism. The website is victimsofcommunism.org. I got to say, this is a new organization to me. Tell us a little bit about your history.
Sure. So our foundation was actually authorized in 1993 by a unanimous act of Congress to educate Americans about the history of communist regimes, and also to memorialize the many victims of communist regimes around the world. And since that time, we have released a high school curriculum supplement. We have a high school teacher education training. We have a college program around the country. And we have an oral history project called Witness, where we take the stories of those who have lived under communist regimes and try to make those available for especially younger people who find it very difficult to know what it's like to live the reality of a socialist system.
Well, Marion, tell us about this recent poll that reveals some surprising and in many ways alarming results about knowledge of socialism and communism among young people.
Right. Well, for, you know, those we call millennials, and I'm considered one of those, would be people under 35, we didn't grow up during the Cold War. We don't remember the stories of the refugee waves coming to the United States from communist regimes in the Soviet Union, Ethiopia, Cuba, Central Eastern Europe. So we don't really have a firsthand experience about what the Cold War was over and how harsh those socialist systems were. And so if we haven't learned it in our high school or college curricula, we won't know it. And this poll that we have just released was conducted by YouGov, and it indicates that millennials are vastly unaware of the scale of communist crime in the last century. Many more believe that George W. Bush killed more people than Joseph Stalin. So just on the level of, you know, knowledge about the 20th century and communist regimes in particular, there's a lot of ignorance. The poll also found that millennials, more of them think that our economic system works against them rather than for them. Some 46% of millennials would vote for a socialist, and 4 in 10 call for a complete overhaul of our economic system. They have a higher appreciation for the values of socialism than of capitalism. So it's a fairly dangerous cocktail of ignorance about the history of communism and socialism, and a disgruntled feeling about our current economic system. And so, you know, what our foundation is encouraging young people to do is look at the alternative every time they've been tried and appreciate that we can perfect and improve our economic system here, but we certainly shouldn't blow it up in an attempt to try yet again the failed ideas of Marxism.
We are speaking with Marion Smith, who's Executive Director of Victims of Communism. This survey, by the way, folks, if you want to access it, it will be on our Facebook page, but it will also be on victimsofcommunism.org if you want to check out that organization. Marion, we have just a few minutes left with you here. We can squeeze in a couple of questions, hopefully. For all those young people that were big Bernie Sanders supporters, feel the burn, and I know there were, you know, a couple of surveys out that that seemed to indicate that a lot of them, I don't remember, it seemed like a lot, maybe a majority, said, well, what's the problem with socialism? Tell our listeners a little bit of the difference between communism and socialism, and just kind of, you know, tongue-in-cheek, I guess, if someone says, well, what's wrong with being a socialist country like they have in Europe? That doesn't seem to be hurting them too badly. You're just trying to scare us, and your organization's just trying to scare us from doing what's actually working in Europe. How would you answer that?
Right. Well, in English, we have a you know, decades-long idea that somehow the terms socialism and communism are really distinct and different things. That's not just, you know, linguistically and in terms of how other people define those terms in other languages the case. Lenin, Marx, Engels, none of these individuals actually made a very precise distinction between socialism and communism. Insofar as they did, communism was seen as the end goal or the final phase in the inevitable progress of history. And so socialists, systems were intended to get us there, and communist parties were, you know, the vanguard of the people, and were entrusted with the central planning and the government. So, but as a practical matter, I mean, it was the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics in which 5 million dissidents worked as slaves in the gulags. It was socialism in one country. That's what Mao called his system in China. And, you know, the examples like that go on and on. So what you have is an intellectual and a historical intertwining of the terms socialism and communism. And if Lenin and Marx and Engels didn't make a big distinction, I'm certainly not going to spend my time trying to.
Okay. Well, Marion, is there information on your website that would kind of for further reading for people, or is it just stats and polls? Okay. What kind
Absolutely.
Of stuff will they find there?
If you go to victimsofcommunism.org, you'll find some of our older history videos that have the stories of those who've lived in these regimes. You can also find publications that are trying to offer the right perspective on some of this history and current attitudes, issues that would be in the news right now. And you'll find some longer-term publications and essays.
All right. Marion Smith, who's Executive Director of Victims of Communism. You can find more information that Marion's been talking about at their website, victimsofcommunism.org. Marion, thanks for being on the program. We look forward to having you on in the near future even.
Sure thing. Thanks.
Well, folks, this is Ed Vitagliano. I'm sitting in for Tim Wildman today. This is Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Ray Pritchard is with me of Keep Believing Ministries. And we're going to be back in just after a short break. We're going to have Sandy Rios on talking about some startling things that I heard on her program this morning right here on American Family Radio. So we'll take a short break. And when we come back, more of today's issues, more of the issues that are driving politics and culture in the United States with an election coming up. Short break. We'll be right back.
The crinkle of wrapping paper, joyful giggles and squeals of children. This Christmas, these sounds will be heard in the most desolate places on Earth, thanks to Operation Christmas Child and people like you. Each year, Operation Christmas Child delivers gifts in Jesus' name to needy children all around the world. To learn how you can deliver good news and great joy to a child in need, visit SamaritansPurse.org. That's SamaritansPurse.org.
One of the more emotional times on our tour of Israel is when we go to the house of Caiaphas. This is where Jesus Christ was held the night before his appearance before Pilate. And we see the dungeon where he was held. And it's just a very striking thing to be there knowing our Lord suffered in this way and was treated in this way. That's one of the places we'll visit is the house of Caiaphas, where the trial took place as well. Well, for more information on our tour of Israel and all the places we'll see and all the places we'll go, it's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country. Our phone number is 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5 for more information. Or if you want to go on the internet, twholyland.com. Go to the website, twholyland.com. Come see the land of the Bible with us in March.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. You probably know someone like Jay Wells in your town. He's a hard-working family man, goes to church on Sunday, owns a small business. He's an all-around good guy. And he's also become a national symbol for the complete and utter failure of President Obama's Affordable Care Act. Mr. Wells of Colquitt, Georgia, was notified the other day that his monthly premiums will increase from $700 a month to more than $1,800 a month. And that doesn't even take into account the family's $5,000 deductible. And the Wells family is not alone. The Department of Health and Human Services announced premiums will increase on average by at least 25% across 39 states. Remember the promise made by President Obama? If you like your plan, you can keep your plan, period. Well, Mr. Wells liked his plan, but thanks to Obamacare, he won't be able to keep his plan. And there's a good chance you might not either. Period. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. And Ray Pritchard, my co-host. Ray, Keep Believing Ministries, keepbelieving.com. What can people find at your website? What have you got going on in the next couple of weeks?
Well, if you come visit us there, you'll find a huge repository of biblical resources, all free, for Christians from around the world. And we get people from Pakistan and Japan and Korea and Indonesia and Africa who come to keepbelieving.com for biblical resources. Last week, my wife and I were in South Korea teaching the Bible at Word of Life Bible Institute, and I'm back home in Dallas this week, and next week off to Florida to teach the Bible down there to students at the Word of Life Bible Institute just north of Tampa. So personally, we do a lot of traveling to speak and teach and encourage people. And as you said earlier, Ed, this is a crazy, messed up world. And we don't even have to convince people of that, right? We
do. That's right.
Just, you know, turn on your TV, you know, you fire up your cell phone, you just read what's going on. So we need, in these days, we need all the encouragement we can get. And especially Christians can get a little discouraged and confused. And so try to encourage people to keep believing in Jesus. And you can find us on the internet at keepbelieving.com.
Well, folks, today it marks the 2-week out point from our election. And what American Family Association is doing and American Family Radio, and we're not alone, we're certainly not alone on this, we are calling for a day of prayer and fasting on the Monday before Election Day. That would be Monday, November 7th. One of the things we sent out on this comes from President Abraham Lincoln. On March 30th, 1863, now remember this is in the middle of the Civil War, President Abraham Lincoln called for a national day of prayer and fasting. And he addressed in that call the need for, quote, our national reformation as a whole people. He didn't exclude anybody from that. We needed to have a great awakening. And this is what he said. We have, and folks, this applies to us today, just as it did in 1863. He says, "We have grown in numbers, wealth, and power as no other nation has ever grown, but we have forgotten God." And President Lincoln at that time said it was our duty, quote, "to humble ourselves before the offended power, to confess our national sins, and to pray for clemency and forgiveness." And I just firmly believe that we as Americans in 2016 can do nothing less. So AFA and American Family Radio, we're joining countless churches and organizations and individuals in calling for a national day of prayer and fasting. You can sign that pledge. We're asking people to pledge to do it. We just feel like a commitment to do it might encourage us to actually do it. You can go to AFR.net and let us know that you will be a participant. That is Monday, November 7th. It's a day we are calling on Christians to seek God's face. You can participate however you want. If it's one meal, two meals, all day, whatever, we're asking you to please join us in crying out for God's mercy. And Ray, I can't think of a more appropriate response for Christians. You read in the Old Testament, and you see trouble coming upon the nation of Israel, not unlike what we're experiencing here in our own day and time. I mean, it's not just craziness. We call it craziness, but there are deep-seated problems that have become all too apparent.
You know, in the Old Testament, you had those moments in history where God's people came together and often called it something like a solemn assembly, where gathered together, the people would confess their sins, gathered together, they would repent, gathered together, they would cry out to the Lord. And in the Old Testament, God would hear and he would answer, and the course of history would be changed. And I wonder, Ed, if sometimes we get so into the cultural flow of things that even as Christians, we begin to doubt. I'm not even talking about the election, but we begin to doubt whether our prayers make any difference at all. Well, let's just say this, that 2 Chronicles 7:14 is as much for us today as it was for the people of God in the Old Testament, and it waits for us. It waits for us to do what it says, to call out to God, to confess our sins, to repent, to turn from our wicked ways. And, you know, I also think about all of this, Ed, the words of that old spiritual. In these heated times, it's easy to point the fingers, but I'm thinking about, it's me. Right. It's me, O Lord, standing in the need of prayer. Not my brother, not my sister, but it's me, O Lord, standing in the need of prayer. So if God's people would come together on the Monday before the election and truly turn to God, we could still see, I'm firmly convinced, a great spiritual awakening in our day. And oh, how desperately we need it.
We certainly do. And I'm going to ask the next voice folks are going to hear, Sandy Rios, who's well known. I want to get her take on this. Sandy Rios, of course, is AFA Director of Governmental Affairs, but she's host of Sandy Rios in the Morning. I was listening to her on the way into work this morning, heard on AFR Talk each weekday morning from 7 to 8 a.m. Central Time. Sandy, welcome to today's issues.
Thanks, Ed. How are you today?
We're doing great. Ray Pritchard is with us from Dallas. Sandy,
hey, Ray.
Hi, Sandy.
I know Ray Pritchard from Chicago. Come on.
Oh, Chicago. You guys ran the streets of Chicago together.
That's right.
Way back when. Well, Sandy, let me ask you this. I was just thinking about this. I was listening to Ray, and I wanted to ask you this question. You're tied into the Washington scene, for want of a better way of expressing it. But you know many of the Christians who are serving our country in D.C. What's the spiritual state up there in terms of the Christians who are, for example, in the House of Representatives and the Senate? I'm assuming they see the great spiritual needs as well as the kind of physical manifestations of that.
Well, that's a loaded question, Ed. you would think that I would be regularly in contact with the Christian leaders here. I'd say that most of my involvement is not with people who necessarily lead with that description.
Okay.
I am very much involved in people who have laid it on the line, who may be Christian and maybe not. And in regard to what I see hardly any Christians in the Senate or the House standing by their commitments. I see hardly any. I don't want to name names. It's not up to me to do that. But one champion comes to mind. I'll just mention one. How about that?
Okay.
Louis Gohmert, man of God, who is just fearless. And he's hated, probably, you know, almost or derided, just almost as much as Ted Cruz was in the Senate. I don't see a lot. I'm not saying none. I'm not saying that. But I don't want to get in the business of listing. But
right.
I just think that I can tell you that very, not many of them are willing to die on the Hill. And so that's kind of why we're in the position we're in. And I would say also, you know, I've been here a long time. When I was president of CWA, I came in 2001. So I've had close links with DC since then. I would say that so much of what we are experiencing, from my point of view, is the compromise and failure of Christian leaders 15 years ago. I saw it then, and I think we're reaping the bitter fruits of that. So that's the sad report that I have for you. I do think that God is quickening his people. You know, as I'm on the air in the mornings, I sense that God is like, their hearts are beating faster. And there are certainly people here in D.C. whose hearts are beating faster, too, but maybe not people whose names you wouldn't know.
Right.
So, Sandy, let me just follow up on that and ask, what is it about Washington that seems to do this? Because we have elected over and over again Christian conservative leaders who said, and I think they were sincere at the time, who said with every good intention, I suppose, I'm going to go to Washington, elect me, and I'm going to take a stand, and we're going to change things. And somehow it seems that Washington changes them more than they change Washington. What's behind that? Why does that happen?
Well, I'm going to give you kind of a really broad response to that, Ray. You know, I think a lot of Christians talk a good game, and for instance, they'll sort of have a boastful, prideful attitude about, you know, being faithful in marriage or doing things on the outside that look like they are forming to the rules and regulations of faith in Christ. But I would say that if you really want to see how they feel, see how they behave after the divorce. See how many Christians actually, you know, don't have sex with other people outside of marriage. Who actually comport themselves with the same godliness they pretended to have when it was convenient and they were married. Okay, there's a point to that. I think in Washington, you get tested fiercely at every level of your being. Like, you say you believe in being honest, but how about this thing? You say you believe there's a right and wrong, but hey, how about this shiny object or this shiny object? And there is so much temptation and tangible ways to actually color outside the lines. And I think people start small. They are convinced in a political atmosphere that if they just settle for this thing, then they're going to do something better later. Or they're going to actually, this one deception will pan out to be something wonderful later. That's what the Republicans say all the time, the leadership. You know, we can't do anything now, so we're going to do something bad now, because later when we have control, we'll do all these good things, but they never do. It's just a town that causes people to decide almost at every point if they're going to be faithful or not. And most of the really faithful followers of Christ and the really honest people who maybe don't even name the name of Christ, but they follow his principles, they have trouble surviving here. Wow. Yeah, so I think that's the best answer I can give you.
Well, Sandy, that is not the answer we wanted to hear. I got to be honest. I thought that was, when I first asked it, I thought that was a softball question. I thought, oh, she's going to, there are brave men and women who are saying that is, wow. And you know what came to mind? And I hate to use something that probably many of our listeners have never even seen, or our younger, you know, younger listeners may have never even heard of, but Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, okay, the old
yeah.
Jimmy Stewart. I'll
yeah.
never forget the scene in the office of the senator, and I can't remember the name of the character. I need to watch it again. But he was confronting this senator about what he had heard about his corruption. And this senator said, well, listen, he said, Jed, I think was Jimmy Stewart's character's name. He said, yes, I make this deal with the devil, so to speak, so I can do so much good for my constituents back home. And that sounds exactly—
What did I just say?
That is, sounds exactly right. What you're just saying. And this is a movie from back in the, maybe the 40s or 50s. It's black and white. They understood the temptation of power as well, because that's the temptation. I make a few deals with the devil, but boy, will I be able to do good for my people back home.
Yeah, I think that there are lies people tell themselves. And I just feel, you know, human nature never changes. You both know that. I do. I have experienced in my own life that if you color outside the lines in, as now I'm speaking as followers of Jesus, it doesn't stay static. The lines get wider and the margins get greater, and pretty soon you got chaos. You know, God expects us to be faithful in the little things, in the small decisions, in the quiet and private areas of our life. And if we start messing with that, we do not stay. God does not suffer unrighteousness with his people.
You're right.
And we start making really bad decisions. And so to counter the depressing news I just gave you, it is also true that I have the privilege and pleasure of working with champions who are uncompromising. I see them all the time. They become my great friends. And I have seen the people around that table pay a great price. I know that that if this election goes one way and not the other, they will pay a greater price. And I work with people who have just committed everything. They are not necessarily, again, naming the name of Jesus in their efforts. I think privately many of them have been raised with the, you know, all truth is God's truth. So they've been raised with the Christian ethic of telling the truth, and they're holding fast, and they're doing everything they can. And I think often my role is to bring God's perspective into the conversation as best I can. But they are, it's a hard time, and they are discouraged because it's like, the little fable of the little Dutch boy putting his finger in the dike to keep the dam from breaking and all that water from rushing down and flooding and destroying the community is kind of where we are. We've got lots of fingers in lots of holes, but the dam is just, the pressure is building and building and building. And so people here, the good men and women need the prayers of God's people. And wow. I know that, you know, when I was just in Grand Rapids this past weekend in another city in Michigan. We were at Calvin College on Saturday morning. It was Frank Gaffney and I speaking, and of course I was representing the American Family Association, and we had so many listeners there. And they just, I know from just being with them in the flesh how people around the country are praying. They're praying for people on the front lines. They are. They are doing that. And I just can't tell them, I will right now, how much that means. How much that means. And, you know, AFR is going to come under tremendous scrutiny.
Right.
The fire is going to be turned up so hot. And all everyone listening to me, including us, are going to have to make some hard choices. And so, you know, always think of the Old Testament story about, was it Joshua who said, choose this day?
Right.
Choose this day. Choose it now. Choose it now. Don't wait. Let's see. I hope I can stand strong. I hope I can make the right decision. Don't wait till that moment. Decide now. Choose this day and build up your strength and your faith. And and then the other part of this to me, you guys, is pledge now that if God should answer our prayers, and he just might.
Right.
We don't deserve it, but he just might. We need to determine that on the other side of those prayers being answered, that we are on our knees in gratitude to him, and we are committing ourselves to living life differently and to doing the country differently and to being involved differently and to doing what it takes to churn it in such a way that we turn our hearts and minds toward God, who our founding fathers honored, and we must honor too.
That voice is familiar, I'm sure, to AFR listeners. That is Sandy Rios, who's AFA Director of Governmental Affairs for us in the Washington, D.C. area. She's also host of Sandy Rios in the Morning. This is Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano and Ray Pritchard are your hosts today. Sandy, let me ask you this. I just got around last night to reading this article from the Daily Caller that basically, I guess, kind of transcribed your interview with David Shippers, who was the chief investigative counsel in the case years ago against Bill Clinton. I have to tell you, I don't think I'm jaded, but I may sometimes get that way about what happens in D.C. I was absolutely shocked at the behind-the-scenes nefarious plotting, whatever you want to call it, that went on during the attempted impeachment of Bill Clinton, and the thousands of pages of documents that have still not been released, sealed by Congress, but maybe more than anything, the fact that only 65 House members and zero members of the Senate. You were talking a few minutes ago about Republicans and people who are supposed to be men and women of faith who have made little compromises. The vast majority didn't even read the evidence against Bill Clinton. I know there's a little bit of history here. You may have to bring some of our listeners up to speed, but I got to say, I was shocked by what I read coming out of your interview with David Shippers.
Yes, and you know, David is from Chicago. He was a Democrat appointed by Henry Hyde, and he was so connected with the Cook County Democrats. His first cousin was the chairman of the Cook County Democrats, and the Democrats were corrupt. You know, they've been corrupt for many years in Chicago, so that's Dave's lineage committed to the Democratic Party. So Henry Hyde asked him to be the chief investigative counsel, which was a huge thing. He asked his cousin at the time, he said, I forgot his first name, but he said, all right, so Henry's asked me to do this, and look, but I'm not gonna cause trouble in the family. I don't want to cause any harm. How do you feel about me doing this? And his cousin said back to him, "Well, Dave, you've always been a straight shooter. You got to do this." And so Dave Shippers, the Democrat, came into this with that background, and he brought all these investigators from Chicago, and they were real straight arrows. I'll never forget this because I did the first interview with Dave Shippers 18 years ago when the impeachment hearing was over in the House. I did the first interview with Henry Hyde. I spent hours with both of them. And honestly, and the interesting thing is, just as a sidebar, when all this stuff is coming out, you know, about Hillary Clinton's involvement in intimidating the women, I just thought, I know Congressman Hyde is not with us anymore. I would have talked to him many times if he'd been still alive, because he was a good friend of mine. But I thought, I wonder if Dave Shippers is still. I wonder if he's still alive. So I looked in the white pages, called, and would you know, he still practices law. He's 87 years old.
Wow.
So that being the backdrop, we picked up where we left off. And Dave, of course, the Ken Starr investigators had collected thousands of pages of evidence, and they did create an evidence room. And this stuff went all the way back to Bill Clinton's time at Oxford. There were allegations there, terrible things. And they invited the congressman could go in there. Their staff couldn't go in. It was just the congressman, and they could come in and read it. And Dave said that for the 7 days, I think it was 7 days, the impeachment a hearing was going on in the House, he had probably, I think he said maybe 5 or 6, maybe 9 or 10 congressmen come in every day. He said, and each and every one of them would say, now, Dave, look, I'm coming in here just because Henry twisted my arm, but I'm not going to vote for impeachment. I'm not going to do that. And they would sit down, and he said, that's okay, just go read the evidence. And he said he went into the room, and one of them, a Democrat, was just shaking his head, saying, I had no idea. I had no idea. And so I think it was a total of 65 that I can't remember the numbers now.
Yes, it says 65 members. House members, zero members of the Senate. Read any of the evidence.
Those that went into the vault with the evidence, only one refused to vote for impeachment. They all converted after they read the evidence. And then when I asked Dave about, of course, it's frightening enough that Bill Clinton, who is Juanita Brogdrick, you know, he is accused and credibly accused. She was also part of his campaign, a Democratic operative. She had no reason to lie. I could tell story after story. He is a rapist by all accounts. And we have, there are stories back going back to Oxford. Henry Hyde told me during a commercial break that there was stuff going all the way back to Oxford. He is now going to maybe be back in the White House. And then secondly, one of the most damning stories David told me was that in the case of Kathleen Willey, who was also a strong Democratic option functionary, lost her husband, went into the Oval Office asking for Bill Clinton's help because she was desperate. Her husband was dead. She didn't have income. And that's when he assaulted her. Fast forward, she decides she's going to testify against him. She's in her yard. Already she has found her cat has been found slaughtered on her doorstep, dead. She's out in her yard sometime later, and a man jogs by, and he says, Miss, are you Kathleen Willey? She said, yes. And he said, how are your kids? And he named them by name. And she said, well, they're fine. Then sometime later, I don't know if it was the same day or later, he came by jogging again, and he said, you're not going to testify, are you? And she said, of course I'm going to testify. And he said, you don't get it, do you? You just don't get it. And Dave Shippers, the chief investigative counsel for the Clinton impeachment, told me that though that man, they later found out, was sent by Hillary Clinton to intimidate and scare Kathleen Willey. So that's the relevant issue. That's the relevant part of the story now, is Mrs. Clinton's part in intimidating and frightening and destroying the women that her husband assaulted or whatever. You can say assaulted, and some of them were consensual and others were not. So that's the story that the American people need to know. And that interview was amazing. We've had probably, I think, something like 15,000 hits on the Facebook page on that story alone. So,
well, what is, give that, this is your Sandy Rios in the Morning? That,
right, Sandy Rios in the Morning, and it's an interview with David Shippers, S-C-H-I-P-P-E-R-S. It was last Friday, and I would encourage all, it was fascinating. He sounds like a character out of, he sounds like Columbo. He's just such a character. But I love him. You know, we became friends through that. It's kind of like, I haven't talked to him in 18 years, but it's sort of like, you remember where you were on 9/11? Well, yeah. That was a big event. And that, our sharing at that moment in history, you know, forever marked me. And if Congressman Hyde were here, he'd say the same thing. But it was, yes, things that people, that the American people don't know now. It was 18 years ago. And, things that people really, really need to know.
Well, Sandy, thank you so much for revealing that kind of information. I got to say, I was shocked reading it, and the very fact. And we're out of time. We could talk for hours with you about this kind of thing. The very fact that only 65 House members and zero members of the Senate read the evidence. It reminds me of the sheer. I don't want to say it's just ineptitude. But when you had people voting for Obamacare, not even reading it. I mean, this is going on and on and on. I get the feeling that these people up in D.C. are clearly out for themselves. They're padding their own pocketbooks and not doing the people's business. And then when you get a story like this with David Shippers, wow.
Well, Sam, you know what? If that's the message you got, it's well received, Ed. We've been trying to tell people that's what's happening in Washington. And that is really why we must clean house.
All right, Sandy Rios of Sandy Rios in the Morning. Sandy, thank you so much for all you do and for kind of being the pointy end of the spear on some of this stuff. God bless you, and continue to pull back the cover on what's happening there in D.C.
Thank you, Ed. Thanks, Ray. Talk to you soon.
All right, folks, we are going to take a five-minute break because, frankly, I need a five-minute break after that. That's the slime that's coming up. Folks, we need to pray. Please go to AFR.net and sign up. Commit to fast and pray for this country on November 7th. We'll be back after 5 minutes. Y'all come back.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.